growth and innovation, two words that best describe the ETF industry. However, rapid growth and innovation creates a critical need for financial advisors and industry practitioners education. Enter the ETF Institute, the first and only independent organization providing industry professionals and financial advisors with certification, education, and training on ETFs. Learn more about the Certified ETF Advisor designation by visiting cetf.org.
ETF Prime is hosted by Nate Geraci, president of investment advisory firm, The ETF Store. This program is for informational purposes only and does not constitute investment advice. Investing in ETFs involves risk, including potential loss of principal. Any past performance figures discussed are not necessarily indicative of future results. Some guests appearing on this program may also be financial sponsors of ETF Prime. The ETF Store is not affiliated with VettaFi or any of its affiliates. VettaFi's participation in this program should not be construed as an endorsement or indication by VettaFi of the value of any ETF Store product or service. Visit ETFstore.com for more information.
Now it's time for ETF Prime, where we discuss everything you need to know about exchange-traded funds and the world of investing. Whether you're an investing expert or just starting out, Nate will help you get up to date with what's happening on Wall Street and show you how exchange-traded funds can help lower your investment costs, reduce your tax bill, and allow you to take advantage of investment opportunities around the world. And now, the host of ETF Prime, Nate Geraci.
All right, joining me will be Kristen Myers, editor-in-chief at ETF.com, who this Wednesday, they'll be hosting an award ceremony in New York City to announce the winners of the 2024 ETF.com Awards. I'll actually be attending this event live and in person, which I'm really looking forward to, because I love stuff like this. I think anytime we can honor the hard work and innovation and entrepreneurial spirit in the ETF space, that's a huge win for everyone, including, obviously, investors and financial advisors who actually use these products. I mean, that's what it's all about at the end of the day. And so Kristen and I will preview that event and some of the finalists in various categories. And then I'm also just curious to hear what's on Kristen's ETF radar right now, which, if you're not familiar with Kristen, she was previously an on-air anchor and reporter at Yahoo Finance, among some other very interesting roles in her career. So she has a unique perspective, and we'll find out which ETF stories most have her attention at the moment. Now, to start this week, I'm joined by both Todd Rosenbluth and Kirsten Chang. Todd, of course, needs no introduction. He's head of research at VettaFi. Kirsten recently joined VettaFi as a senior industry analyst. And interestingly, she comes over from CNBC, where she helped with booking and production on Squawk Box. She was also a producer for their ETF Edge show with Bob Pisani, which I've been fortunate enough to join a few times. But we have several topics to get into, including ETF flows, in particular gold ETF flows. And then we're also going to discuss fixed income, which, look, I'll tell you, I think this is still a highly challenging area for most investors. It seems like a lot of investors were expecting rates to come back in this year, right? There were expectations for, six Fed rate cuts? That's obviously not going to happen. And you look here more recently, I don't know, the inflation data is still coming in pretty hot. And I've talked about my own skepticism around things like the risk return prospects and longer duration bond ETF. So we're going to get into all of that now.
Now we're joined by the experts at VettaFi, a new data analytics and thought leadership company that is transforming financial services from an industry to a community, one relationship at a time.
$800 billion. I think we have to say that again. $800 billion and counting for an industry that is still growing in size is impressive.
Todd, Kirsten, thank you for joining me this week.
Great to be with you, Nate. Thanks so much for having me.
So, Kirsten,
my pleasure.
You may or may not recall, Kirsten, but you and I have actually interacted previously in your role at CNBC, right? It's a small world, and so I'm certainly familiar with what you were doing. But for our listeners, just tell us a little bit more about your background and now your current role over at Vettafi.
Sure. Yeah, so as you mentioned, I was at CNBC for more than a decade. I wore various producer hats while I was there, and I worked with a very colorful cast of characters, starting out on CNBC's morning show, Squawk Box, with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin, before moving on to join, of course, Bob Pisani, our senior stocks correspondent, on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. And so I had the privilege of witnessing the sort of beating heart of the stock market come to life firsthand. You know, we talked to traders every day. We took the pulse of what was going on, and of seeing wealth creation in the form of IPOs and, of course, the rapid rise of the ETF business. And it was about 6 years ago, six or seven, that Bob and I started up CNBC's weekly ETF Edge show, which you just mentioned. You and Todd know very well, both been frequent guests on. So now I'm thrilled to be joining Vettafi and to stay knee-deep in the ETF game. So I'll be part of the research team writing and putting out content on topical trends, eventually helping to moderate some of our many live webcasts to help educate RIAs and investors about what products are out there, and at the same time help issuers understand what investors want to see more of. You know, at CNBC, Vettafi was one of our go-to sources, and both Todd and Tom Lydon have been our Swiss Army knives as far as being able to cover anything and everything ETF. So it's great to be part of the team now.
You mentioned Bob Pisani. I'm not sure if you're aware, but Bob is actually one of the finalists for ETF.com's Lifetime Achievement Award. I'm just curious, what was that like working alongside him? I have to imagine that was a fantastic experience for you.
Oh, it was amazing. Yes. You know, Bob is the ultimate bon vivant. I've learned as much from him about cocktails, fine dining, and world travel as I have probably about investing in the stock market. He's got this insatiable curiosity. He never misses a chance to impart his wisdom. And as far as investing goes, he always likes to remind people, investors and producers alike, don't yell at the stock market. That's one of his maxims. You know, you're not the lone genius that sees the coming catastrophe. That's from his book, Shut Up and Keep Talking. And when dining with traders, always stay one drink behind and shut up.
Always good advice. So I was looking. You're already off to a very fast start at Vettafi. I saw you publish two pieces recently, including one today, and I thought we might briefly touch on both of those. The first one was a look at first quarter ETF flows. You called this the ETF flowdown, which I love that. Mm-hmm. And you highlighted several areas. So let me rattle these off real quick. You noted the flows into the largest S&P 500 ETFs, so ticker VU and IVV. You noted the flows into SPLG, which is also an S&P 500 ETF, but it's the cheapest one, and that made the flow leaderboard, even though it's significantly smaller than the other S&P 500 ETFs in terms of assets. You also highlighted the appetite for large-cap, high-duration growth with an ETF like Invesco's QQQ. And then finally, you touched on spot Bitcoin ETFs, which had two of the top six ETFs overall in terms of inflows, with IBIT and FBTC. And you also noted flows into active ETFs, such as the BlackRock U.S. Equity Factor Rotation ETF, ticker DYNF. Obviously, there's a lot here. I would love to have you maybe pick one of those stories and just offer a bit more color. Like, is there one that you find particularly interesting or perhaps you think has more staying power as we look ahead to the remainder of the year?
Yeah, I just want to highlight, you mentioned active ETFs. You know, we saw record net inflows in the first quarter there. I mentioned in my piece BlackRock's U.S. Equity Factor Rotation, that's DYNF, and that was the most popular actively managed ETF in the first quarter. But we're also seeing lots of covered call demand in the form of net inflows into products like JEPI, J.P. Morgan Equity Premium Income ETF, JEPI, and, of course, JEPQ, that's the J.P. Morgan NASDAQ Equity Premium Income ETF, particularly with those covered call overlays. I think that has some real staying power. The strong demand we've seen makes perfect sense there because the market right now is trading near all-time highs. Valuations are stretched. You know, if the market stays in that sort of broad uptrend, that fat and flat trading range, if you will, for investors who want to stay in the market, they want to keep collecting those call premiums to generate that additional income.
Todd, I know that you're just chomping at the bit here. Do you want to chime in on any of those flow stories or even what Kirsten just highlighted?
Well, I can't believe you're keeping you're holding back a bit, because I know you're skeptical about covered call demand persisting. So I'm going to just drive right past that. I'm also going to drive past the spot Bitcoin ETFs, because I know we've covered that quite a bit. I would just highlight, you shouted out SPLG. I want to shout that out again. This is the cheapest of those S&P 500 ETFs, but for a while, it still took a challenge for iShares. iShares and Vanguard were dominating in the low-cost broad market products, and it's great to see State Street Global Advisors have success. They can have success with SPLG and SPY, as we saw in the first quarter, because SPY, I think, led the inflows for the month of March. It still had net outflows for the quarter, but SPLG, low-cost, buy and hold, where SPY is, of course, the more tactical, short-term, institutionally-oriented product. So I think it's just great to see State Street have the success that it had in the first quarter.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, seeing SPLG on the top 10 of inflows in the first quarter definitely stood out to me. I will make a quick comment going back to the covered call ETFs. I am still skeptical around this category, simply because... And I realize we've had some volatility here recently, but if the market keeps powering ahead, you're capped on the upside in a lot of these strategies. And I get the allure of them. What does Eric Balchunas over at Bloomberg call these? Boomer candy, right? You have income, lower volatility. I 100% get the allure. I think there's just too many of these products now on the market, and I just worry that maybe investors don't fully appreciate the risk return profile of these, again, in particular if the market keeps marching higher. On the spot Bitcoin ETFs, obviously I've covered those ad nauseum on the show, so I don't want to go down that path, other than, again, it's very impressive to have two of the top six ETFs overall in terms of inflows be spot Bitcoin ETFs. I don't know if either of you want to comment on either of my retorts there.
I'm okay with us moving on. I think we've covered right. That in prior shows.
All right, fair enough. So, Kirsten, the other piece that you published actually today was on gold ETFs, and you noted how gold ETFs had 9 straight months of outflows through February, but demand has started to pick up over the past month or so, which I've got to tell you, this is much to my chagrin, because I had a bet with Todd that flows would pick up a long, long time ago. And I'll let Todd comment on that here in a moment. But just talk about what you're seeing around gold and gold ETFs right now.
Yeah, that's right. So gold ETFs suffered, as you mentioned, 9 straight months of outflows. But I do think, it's no surprise gold ETFs gained traction with gold prices taking off as they have. We've got no shortage of geopolitical turmoil in the world right now. We have a record number of elections this year. And on top of that, we've also seen some steady hoarding of gold reserves among the central banks, plus China's retail demand, obviously the recovery story there. They don't have many alternatives, Chinese retail buyers, because both the real estate market and stocks have severely underperformed over in China. So not too many places to put their money to work. But obviously, in terms of gold flows, still seeing a lot of action in GLD. That's the Spider Gold Trust, the largest and most liquid gold ETF. But also some strong net inflows into GLDM, which is GLD's lower-cost cousin. That's Spider Gold Mini Shares Trust, GLDM. And it's a similar story with the iShares Gold Trust Micro ETF, ticker IAUM. That's the cheapest physical gold ETF on the market. So as Todd mentioned, it's a trend we've seen in broad-based equity ETFs, too. Investors are flocking to some lower-cost options, and hopefully that means more retail investors are getting involved. So it's encouraging to see that. You know, we've seen the usual ebbs and flows with the hotter inflation data and dampening hopes of Fed rate cuts, but gold itself has remained resilient, and there's still a lot of bullishness there.
You noted something really interesting in your piece, which was a State Street study finding that more millennials are embracing gold as an investment and that they prefer gold ETFs as the best way to access gold. My sense is many people would assume that millennials would be embracing Bitcoin, right? Digital gold, mm-hmm. not increasing their interest in gold ETFs. Did that surprise you at all? What did you think of that?
Yeah, no, I did find it surprising, yes. You know, typically we think of gold as more of a traditional asset class, but I think more traditional investors still have a slight preference for owning gold bullion itself. I would say it's really the ETF revolution that has made gold more investable and safer, more accessible to younger generations. You know, 20 years ago, to own gold, you'd need to pay a commission to buy physical gold coins or gold bars. And that's on top of the cost it would take to store and to insure them and, you know, in some cases, assay their value. So it's encouraging to see more millennials favoring gold ETFs as their preferred risk diversifiers. You know, Bitcoin is obviously an intangible asset, so something like 9 times more volatile than gold and highly speculative. But who knows? Now that we have more spot Bitcoin ETFs coming to market, we may start to see them own more of those from a tactical perspective. But I think from a longer-term strategic standpoint, only time will tell.
Yeah, the flows have been interesting to me for a long time, just around gold ETFs, because if you go back to 2022, I've talked a lot about this, gold significantly outperformed on a relative basis, and the flows didn't materialize. And so going into last year, I really thought we would see much stronger demand for gold ETFs, just given the overall environment. And then you fast forward to the beginning of this year, the flows still hadn't materialized. I think some people wanted to attribute that to the debut of the spot Bitcoin ETFs, and perhaps they were stealing some of the audience there. But I think the counter to that would be we hadn't seen flows into gold ETFs for several years. And so I don't think it was something that you could attribute to spot Bitcoin ETFs. Now, moving forward to what you were saying, I think certainly we could see spot Bitcoin ETF demand impact gold ETFs to some degree. But Todd, once again, I know you're just chomping at the bit here, because I know you want to tell listeners what will be happening on Wednesday. So I'm going to give you the floor here.
Yeah, well, Wednesday is a big day. I think, as you mentioned, there's an awards that's taking place later on, and I believe you're also going to be in town doing something at the New York Stock Exchange. But what I'm thinking about on Wednesday is how I'm going to have my steak cooked, and I'm going to have it cooked medium. And for the listeners that may recall, you and I had a bet on whether gold ETF demand would materialize in 2023. It did not. I'm sorry for that. I actually would have liked to have seen it, just not that strong demand. And we saw actually net outflows. So you will be taking me out for steak lunch. We've taken the dinner and made it lunch, but I feel good about my ability to get my money's worth out of a good meal and good conversation. And I'll leave it at that.
I'm greatly looking forward to that as well. What one thing that I'll say, like that had to be one of the worst bets that I've ever made, not because you won it. I think the threshold we had is that there would be $5 billion of net inflows into gold ETFs last year. I think we ended up having like $5 billion in outflows. That's how far off I was, which is pretty bad. But no, I'm greatly looking forward to our lunch and settling up the bet. And you did mention I will be at the New York Stock Exchange moderating just a fantastic panel on spot Bitcoin ETFs and digital assets. We'll have Grayscale's Dave Lavelle, Bitwise's Matt Hogan, the New York Stock Exchange Exchange's Madel Legem, and then ProShare Simeon Hyman. So just a fantastic group, and it's a free online webinar. So I actually tweeted out the link to that this morning if anybody's interested. All right, Todd, so after I settle our gold ETF bet, later in the week, Vettafi will be hosting a fixed income symposium on April 18th. And you heard me mention at the top of the podcast, look, it seemed like everyone and their brother was betting on interest rates to come back in this year. And instead, at least as of now, there's actually been an uptick. And you heard me say, I think fixed income continues to be a monumental challenge for investors. I was actually looking this morning. So TLT, the iShares 20-plus year Treasury ETF, that's down about 8% this year. And it's still in the midst of like a 40% plus drawdown overall going back a few years. So basically anything with duration has been hurt somewhat this year, even if you look at broad bond ETFs like BND. But you know, the flows tell us that investors have still been trying to play an ETF like TLT, at least over the past year or so. The other thing that I'll mention is that despite the economy looking pretty good overall, I do feel like some investors are hesitant to take on credit risk right now because they're worried about a potential slowdown at some point in the future. And so I'd love to have you perhaps touch on some of those challenges, and maybe you can tie that into previewing the VettaFi Fixed Income Symposium.
Well, I think you did a great job of showing why we're having this event and why there's almost 1,000 people who are already registered for this event. And I know we're going to have even more. People can visit ETFtrends.com for the link. This is free. It's 3 hours of 9 different sessions. We're bringing in experts to cover all of the topics you talked about, whether to take on credit risk, whether to take on duration risk, what's the Fed's next move, why could and should you turn to active management. So I'm extremely excited that I'm going to get to have those conversations with some of the leaders. I guess let me just touch on quickly what you alluded to. We had the biggest one-day jump in yield for the 10-year Treasury in, I think, over 18 months. That happened when the CPI numbers came in stronger than expected. But what we keep hearing from advisors, the data is backing this up from a flow standpoint, is that taking on investment-grade credit risk and moving into intermediate-term products has been popular. That's certainly what was in the flows data that Kirsten was talking about earlier. We saw VCIT from Vanguard, SPIB, that are investment grade intermediate term bond products were popular. Meanwhile, we saw outflows for HYG. So taking on too much credit risk is not being recognized within this marketplace. So this is a challenging market. I'm excited that I and my colleagues are going to get to talk to some of the experts in the industry, from PIMCO, from American Century, from T. Rowe Price, from others to help us sort through this challenging marketplace.
Todd, something you and I have talked quite a bit about recently is actively managed fixed income ETFs. And I saw during a webcast with Fidelity in late March, VettaFi asked attendees the following question. How might your allocation to active ETFs change over the next 12 months? And the majority, 62%, said it would increase. I thought that was pretty telling, but I want to add to that something else that I thought was interesting. So Capital Group recently noted that only 12% of fixed income ETF assets are active versus 78% of fixed income mutual fund assets. Which, to me, I think that lays out the opportunity for ETF issuers pretty well. I mean, that's a huge disconnect there. I'm assuming you would agree with that, and maybe just talk about how active fixed income ETFs play into everything here.
Yeah, so we're certainly finding interest in active management. As we mentioned earlier, equity space saw some strong inflows during the first quarter. Fixed income ETFs or active fixed income ETFs have been around a little bit longer. That 12% is healthy, but is certainly still a minority of this. We've seen a growing number of products that have come to market. Some of the leaders within the active world, Fidelity, PIMCO, T. Rowe Price, TCW, you mentioned Capital Group. I could go on and on of firms that now have their expertise in the fixed income marketplace now available in the ETF structure. And in most cases, they offer multi-sector strategies. So that's the best ideas. Where does the team think the opportunities arise? So we find this as much of an educational effort. It's obviously something we at VettaFi and certainly with you in your efforts are trying to support by raising a spotlight on some of these products and helping advisors and end investors see that there are these products that are out here. They're from the firms they're familiar with. They're relatively low cost. They're relatively accessible and liquid. They're tax efficient like ETFs are available. So I'm excited about this opportunity in the ETF marketplace. I think it's one of the hidden gems where we'll see a lot of white space continue to happen in the ETF marketplace. And again, many of these managers, I think more than a dozen, will be speaking on our fixed income symposium coming up.
I'm so glad you mentioned the educational efforts needed around this category, because on that same Capital Group survey that I mentioned, it found that financial professionals are allocating less than 4% of their assets under management to active fixed income ETFs. And one of the reasons was because less than half of the advisors surveyed expressed that they were very confident in understanding how to use active fixed income ETFs in client portfolios. What's interesting is that compares to roughly 7 in 10 who said they were confident with fixed income mutual funds. So to what you were saying, I mean, that's clearly an indication of the lack of understanding around some of the potential benefits that the ETF structure can offer here. And so I think you're right. I think just additional education around how to use these in the portfolio and what some of the benefits are will go a long way here. Just a few minutes left. Todd, I saw, I think you wrote a number of pieces on fixed income ETFs over the past week or two. I know leading up to this fixed income symposium, but one that stood out to me was on loan ETFs. And I'm just curious what caught your attention there enough to where you wanted to write about it.
Well, so a couple of reasons. One, we saw loan ETFs have gained in popularity this year. JAAA, which is a Janus Henderson ETF, and BKLN, which is an Invesco senior loan ETF. Both of those were in the top 20 of net inflows during the first quarter for fixed income products. So advisors and investors are embracing these loan ETFs. Loans you won't find within in the ag. So people are turning to these ETFs and bonds to get relatively low duration, taking on a bit of credit risk or in some cases more significant credit risk in order to get income. And I just find that appealing and the benefits of that. We're going to have PIMCO and Panagram talking about that at our upcoming event on Thursday. It's a marketplace that I think is less understood, but is starting to gain traction. And so I'm excited that we find another tool in the toolbox for advisors and investors to tap into in the fixed income marketplace using ETFs.
Kirsten, before I let you go, anything you would add here, whether it be on loan ETFs or active fixed income ETFs or even just fixed income ETFs in general?
I'll just say there are a lot of indexing devotees who've obviously been skeptical of active ETFs. But, you know, as we see money continue to move from mutual funds to ETFs, there will inevitably be that subset of investors, sort of a self-selecting group who prefer to stick to and rely on those active strategies. And for fixed income in particular, given these very tight credit spreads and the Fed likely pushing off rate cuts, we'll probably see more demand for fund managers who can generate that incremental income through actively managed fixed income ETFs. But as Todd said, there's still that knowledge gap. So hopefully investors can continue to learn a lot more about these products from our upcoming symposium.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. I mean, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier and what I mentioned at the top. I just feel like the fixed income environment overall, even though we now have yield, which, of course, we didn't have 5 years ago, it's just so challenging because investors are having a hard time deciphering how the Fed's going to react to everything here, the direction of rates, what does the credit environment look like? You mentioned the extremely tight credit spreads that we have right now. And my experience just in talking to advisors over the years is that they're much more comfortable on the equity side of the equation, making, we'll say, active decisions, but not so much on the fixed income side. And so I do think that offers a nice tailwind to actively manage strategies in the fixed income space. But Todd, Kirsten, this was fun this week. I really enjoyed the conversation. Kirsten, certainly look forward to having you on the podcast more in the future. But thank you both for joining me.
Thanks so much, Nate. Great to be with you.
That was VettaFi's Todd Rosenbluth and Kirsten Chang.
Many investors have seen that diversifying across stocks and bonds alone may not be enough to help safeguard assets. The AllianceBernstein Conservative Buffer ETF, ticker BUFC or BUFC, seeks to tackle that problem. BUFC is designed to help manage downside risk more precisely, which may help investors mitigate the pain of sell-offs without giving up the opportunity to grow your investments when markets rally. To learn more about the AB Conservative Buffer ETF, ticker BUFC, visit abffunds.com/go/ETFs. Investing in securities involves risk and there is no guarantee of principal. Investors should consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. expenses of the fund/portfolio carefully before investing. For copies of our prospectus or summary prospectus, which contain this and other information, visit us online at www.alliancebernstein.com or contact your AB representative. Please read the prospectus and or summary prospectus carefully before investing. Buffered ETF risk. There can be no guarantee that the fund will be successful in its strategy to buffer against underlying ETF price declines. A buffered ETF must be held for the entire buffer period in order to realize the full benefit of the upside/downside caps. BuffZ is distributed by Foreside Fund Services, LLC. Foreside is not affiliated with AB.
Understanding the complex fixed income environment is critical to your portfolio's success. VettaFi's Fixed Income Symposium is happening April 18th and brings the experts and thought leaders straight to you. Hear the insights you need to succeed in 2024. Register for free at etftrends.com.
I'm now joined by Kristen Myers, editor-in-chief at ETF.com, who this week on Wednesday, they'll be hosting the 2024 ETF.com Awards to honor the industry's best and brightest and all of the outstanding achievements and excellence we've seen across the space recently. Kristen is on the line with me from New York. Kristen, it's an absolute pleasure. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, so I see the dress code for Wednesday's event is formal cocktail attire, which whatever that is, I'm pretty sure that I don't own it. I'm telling you that right now. So I hope you all are still going to let me in.
Don't worry. You can come up in sweatpants and we will still have a seat waiting for you.
So tell us more about the event, which I really am looking forward to. And then also just explain the award selection process itself so people understand how nominees and winners are determined.
Yeah, well, I mean, just on the logistics level, as you were mentioning, the awards are going to be this Wednesday evening. They're going to be kicking off at 6 p.m. In New York. We're actually going to be able to gather in person. It's actually going to be my first ETF.com awards, so I'm incredibly excited. And it's just really going to be a night not just of honoring essentially a lot of different ETFs, a lot of different funds, a lot of different issuers, and even folks in the ETF space, but I think a really nice opportunity for everyone in the industry to meet some new folks, see people that they've already known before, and get a chance to really mingle and have a really nice night of fun. I should also mention that this year is going to be, I'm going to say I'm not biased, but I think it's going to be the best awards because I'm emceeing the event this year. So I know everyone's going to want to attend just to see me up on stage cracking some jokes that I've had AI write or something like that. So it's definitely going to be fun for that reason. But this year we actually had a record number of nominations. Just a little bit about the process. Anyone can nominate anyone or a fund, I should say, really for any of our 17 categories. And then what happens is we actually go through and I won't give all the, yeah, I won't fully tell everyone how the sausage is made, but we do have some database and technical-based criteria that we have for each category to essentially get to the final five nominees, which are then handed to an independent panel of judges that actually makes the decision. So it's a kind of blind voting process. The editorial team doesn't have any final say in the final winners, because we again have that independent panel of judges that essentially make those decisions. So if you're unhappy with the results, go yell at them. Do not yell at me.
All right. So you mentioned that awards will be given in 17 categories. And obviously, we're not going to go through all of those here today. But
right.
I thought maybe we could highlight a handful of these. And I'd love to just get your reaction or hot take on whether it be the nominees or category itself. So let's do that. Let me start with ETF of the year. So the nominees are the Bitwise Crypto Industry Innovators ETF, ticker BITQ, the Invesco NASDAQ 100 ETF, ticker QQQM, the Invesco S&P 500 Equal Weight ETF, ticker RSP, the JP Morgan NASDAQ Equity Premium Income ETF, ticker JEPQ, and then the Pacer U.S. Small Cap Cash Cows 100 ETF, ticker CAF. What do you think about this list of finalists?
Yeah, so I actually think this is a really strong category. I would have hated to have been the judges trying to pick one of the finalists or the actual winner among this group. What I found really super interesting about this is actually the kind of fight bit that's happening between JEPQ and QQQM. Obviously, because QQQ has been such a popular ETF, especially as we've seen just tech really on a rip tear over the last year and actually last several years. And so it's actually interesting to see that JEPQ and then QQQM essentially going at it, going head to head inside of this category, these two tech almost titans, I'll call them ETFs, inside of this category. And then, of course, BitQ right there really tapping into this sort of cryptocurrency movement that we've really been kind of seeing with the launch of those 11 spot Bitcoin ETFs. And we've since had more spot Bitcoin ETFs essentially drop this year. And I think that there's been such a upswell and a movement behind, you know, a broader appeal and broader interest in terms of investing in those cryptocurrencies. And so I think this category is incredibly strong. I'm actually excited. They haven't told me all the winners. I know some, and I actually don't know who the ETF of the year is going to be. So I'm really excited to actually find out on the night who that winner will be.
I think all of that is well said. I agree. This is a really strong category. And what jumped out to me here is just how reflective these ETFs are of everything that we saw in the markets over the past year, mm-hmm. to what you were saying. You mentioned crypto. Obviously, if you look at the NASDAQ 100, we know about the performance there. Covered call ETF strategies. I was talking about those in the previous segment. That continues to be a space where we're seeing a lot of new launches and a lot of investor interest. And then when you look at like an equal weight ETF or the small cap cash cows ETF from Pacer, I think there's been a lot of concern from investors around the top heaviness of the market. And so they're looking at other alternatives and perhaps diversifying the portfolio. So that's what stood out to me, is I really think that these nominees are reflective of what we saw in the markets. Another category I want to ask you about is the Lifetime Achievement Award. And, mm-hmm. you know, as I think back on this over the past decade plus, there's a long list of industry pioneers and certainly key contributors who have won this award. This year's nominees, this is just another great list. So they include Andrew Schlossberg, who's president and CEO of Invesco, CNBC's mm-hmm. Bob Pisani, Bitwise's CEO Hunter Horsley, Jan Van Eck, who, of course, is CEO of ETF issuer Van Eck, BondBlocks's Joanna Galagos, who I actually recently had on the podcast, and then State Street's Rory Tobin, who's global head of Spider ETFs. What would you highlight here? Again, obviously a very impressive list of nominees.
I mean, honestly, we could talk about the achievements of every single one of these people in its own separate podcast. I just really, again, think this category is really full of some absolute heavy hitters, people that have really seen a lot of changes in the industry with decades of experience, and not just seen changes in the industry, but actually have been on the forefront of making some of those changes in the industry. And so really what this category says to me is that it is full of innovation, it is full of experience. And what I'm actually really interested in is getting a chance to talk to them to really see where they see the ETF industry going next. Because there just have been so many changes, but there's been such a rapid acceleration, I think, in the ETF space. I mean, you want to look over at Van Eck, right? The mutual fund pushing into the ETF space, right? That kind of conversion that we've seen really rapidly happening over the last couple of years. I just think that this category, again, really speaks to just how broad this space really is, but really how much exciting things are really left to come in this space. So I'm really excited actually to have a chance to speak with everyone that's in this category that's been nominated, that's going to be there, because I want to pick all of their brains about what they see as coming next in the ETF space.
I love how you said a good mix of innovation and experience here, because you and I are just on the same page today. That's exactly what stuck out to me. You know, when I look at BondBlocks's Joanna Galagos and Bitwise's Hunter Horsley, clearly those are two issuers who are really trying to push the envelope on the innovation side. And then you mentioned experience of somebody like Andrew Schlossberg at Invesco or State Street's Rory Tobin. And then I would say CNBC's Bob Pisani sort of encompasses it all, right, with the experience, but also covering innovative topics within the ETF space. So I think that's well said. All right, let me ask you about two more categories here. First, ETF Issuer of the Year. So the nominees are Capital Group, Dimensional, Fidelity, Franklin Templeton, Invesco, and VanEck. And as I look at that list, clearly some pretty big heavy hitters in the ETF space. Any quick comments on those finalists?
Yeah, so I mean, I think that this is kind of in an interesting way, a little bit reflective of what we were just saying about that Lifetime Achievement Award group, right? What's really important to understand about this category, if you look at the description or sort of like the criteria to be in this, to be a nominee in this category, we were really looking at improving investor outcomes, again, through product introductions, but also investor support. And really the big key word here is innovation in 2023. And that's really what we were looking for when, you know, we were looking at all the nominees for this category. And so what I would say that this group really highlights and really represents is, again, not just the experience in the ETF space, but again, also, again, looking forward towards that innovation. And so a name like Dimensional Fund Advisors, right, really jumped out to me, or Capital Group, right? But then you also have the experience that comes from an Invesco or a VanEck. And even still that experience, needing that innovation, looking forward, considering new types of ETFs, new wrappers, different ways that essentially to improve investor outcomes, to really make sure that we can, for any investors, whether you are a retailer or you are a client of an FA or you're an FA that's, you know, purchasing these ETFs for client portfolios, that you can purchase something that is going to really maximize those returns for those investor portfolios. And so I really think that these issuers that are in this list really highlight that.
All right, briefly, the other category we have to touch on is new ETF ticker of the year. I feel like that's always a fun one.
One of my favorite categories.
It's so good. So the nominees here are the Defiance Israel Bind ETF, ticker symbol CHAI. That's pretty good.
Right.
The Music Global Music Industry ETF, ticker MUSQ. Another good one. The Strive Enhanced Income Short Maturity ETF, ticker BUXX, Bucks. That's pretty good. The Themes Cybersecurity ETF, ticker SPAM. And then the Touchstone Climate Transition ETF, ticker symbol HEAT, H-E-A-T. Again, another great list of finalists here. I will say it never ceases to amaze me the ticker symbols some of these issuers come up with. I would say, like, this award category, this is absolutely a marketing or creativity award. But any thoughts on the finalists or even just the importance of ETF ticker symbols?
You know what? I'll actually talk about the importance of ETF ticker symbols, because I don't know why all funds don't do this. I just think it's a really nice opportunity. One, to have a little bit of fun, right? Finance can be fun. Investing can be fun. But also just genuinely, it is actually a really great way to kind of keep your fund just really in the forefront of an investor's mind. Music, for example, that's MUSQ. I mean, that's so easy to remember. Or Bucks or SPAM, HEAT, HI. These are all really easy tickers to remember. And so when you are thinking about, and they're also really great opportunities for you to kind of very clearly say what your fund is and what your fund is about in just that ticker symbol name. And so while it is incredibly fun, and I love seeing, you know, these really clever, witty, funny ticker names, I mean, just on a very real, almost marketing level, I actually think it's a really smart idea, because we have literally thousands of ETFs, right? And more are coming out every single day. We've got more launches every single day. There's just been such an acceleration in the ETF space. And so how do you stand out, right? If folks aren't going to go through and check every single performance on every single ETF, sometimes that ticker name could actually be that differentiating factor, particularly for, I think, those retail investors.
Well, and the other piece of that, too, is that it's really a low-cost way to stand out in market. We know how tough it is in the ETF space to compete with so many innovative products on the market and just the sheer number of products. And you mentioned this being a way to stand out. It's a way to do so without having to, you know, use an enormous marketing budget. So that's another benefit there. Kristen, before we move on, anything else that you would highlight regarding the 2024 ETF.com awards?
Yeah, well, I've already described them as the best ever. So I'm really going to have to now, we're going to have to do some, not heavy lifting, but I'm really going to have to put my money where my mouth is now Wednesday night to make sure that it is really the best. Look, I think this year's awards and last year, you know, there was a lot of discussion from our CEO, Mike Morelli, who kind of talked about a lot of the changes that had happened at ETF.com, right? New brand launch. I think this year's ETF.com awards are really going to kind of highlight how a year on, how much change has really happened at the brand in such a positive way. The growth that we've had editorially, for example, all of the content that we're covering and really shows where we're going to be heading next. And I really think that the categories, as you mentioned, there's 17 of them. We obviously weren't able to touch on all of them today. But just, again, really highlighting, one, just the kind of strength that we're seeing in this industry, the changes that we're seeing in this industry, the excitement that I think and acceleration that we have in this industry into 2024 and beyond. And I think that we're capturing that really well at ETF.com. So I really look at these awards as a nice almost marriage between what we are seeing in the ETF space and also essentially how we're covering it over at ETF.com.
Yeah, again, very well said. It's just such a celebration of the ETF industry. So truly congratulations on everything you and ETF.com are doing to make this happen. I think it's really an enormous service to the industry, and I'm really looking forward to the event. So thank you for that. All right, with our remaining time, I thought it would be interesting to hear what's on your ETF radar right now, because obviously you are editor-in-chief at ETF.com, so I assume you're required to have your finger on the pulse of everything going on in the industry. I feel like right, you have a front-row seat to see what's hot and what's not. And so what are maybe two or three stories that have your attention right now? And you know what? Before you answer that, let's take a step back here. Let's briefly touch on your background, because I think listeners will appreciate your experience in the financial media, because you're certainly no rookie here. So tell us more about that, and then we'll get into a few ETF stories.
Yeah, absolutely. And it'll give me some time, because honestly, to be in the ETF space feels like a bit like standing in the middle of a tornado. There's just so many things happening at all times. And if you blink, something new kind of flies by your face. But yes, as you're saying, I have been in this, and when I say this industry, I really mean the business and financial journalism space for quite some time now. I actually started out my career years and years and years ago, back when I got out of grad school, in the finance space, in terms of working in news at Bloomberg, actually, in Norway. Covered a lot of oil and gas news there, as you can probably imagine, currency news, before, you know, moving back to the United States. And I eventually made my way over to Yahoo Finance, where it was a lot of market coverage, a lot of equities in the equity space. And so stocks are, you know, obviously like my, I don't want to say my only love, but one of my first loves, I will say that. Covering, you know, corporate earnings, just essentially general market moves, macroeconomics. And I was a reporter and an anchor there before moving on to a site called The Balance, which is one of two finance properties owned by Dotdash Meredith. We call ourselves affectionately the little sister to Investopedia. I was the editor-in-chief there. So, again, still talking about macroeconomics, a little bit of personal finance, and then kind of wound my way over to what I call affectionately the dark side, which is the world of ETFs. You guys had cookies, so I decided to come over and stay for a bit. And I'm just having absolutely so much fun. I mean, I've been at ETF.com now since mid-January, so I've pretty much just hit my three-month mark as editor-in-chief at ETF.com, and it's incredible just how the industry just has really welcomed me with open arms. How many folks that I used to interview quite often about ETFs, you know, when I was anchoring, and how nice it is to kind of come back and see them all again in this new role.
everybody comes over to the dark side eventually because ETFs are eating the asset management industry. Just out of curiosity, you mentioned doing like the on-air anchoring, and then, of course, you were a reporter. Did you have a preference on either of those? Like, did you like being on air? Did you like doing behind-the-scenes reporting, both?
I liked both. I just love telling stories, and I really love essentially doing interviews and being able to kind of distill that information for folks, whether they are, you know, retail investors, people that are just getting started, have no idea how to invest. That's one of my personal passions, really talking about financial literacy and getting folks really involved in investing and wealth building. So from that category all the way to folks that are, you know, far more experienced financial professionals and having conversations with politicians and regulators, for example, that are really going to directly impact their work or what they're doing in the space. And so if that was on air, I enjoyed it. If it was writing an article, I enjoyed that. I really just appreciated the opportunity to kind of do interviews, tell those stories, and it really didn't matter to me how I was doing it, whether it was on a podcast like we're doing now, on air, or in the form of an article.
All right. So in terms of hot ETF topics or stories you're tracking right now, again, give us two or three that have your attention. There's obviously a lot going on in the markets. There's a lot going on in ETFs. What's standing out to you right now?
Yeah. So first and foremost is a little bit of a macro story. I'm absolutely watching, and I think everyone else is, inflation and the Fed, and really how it has been impacting the markets, and therefore a lot of ETFs that we're seeing. Fixed income, for example, TLT is one of those ETFs that kind of pops out into my head, is obviously having been heavily impacted by interest rate moves, the will they, won't they, from the Fed, the real estate ETFs, for example, that have been really impacted, but also even interestingly, the tech ETFs that haven't been impacted, because obviously the higher rate environments tends to impact those tech stocks and therefore those tech ETFs. And we've just absolutely seen the whole tech industry kind of shrug off some of these concerns about rates. And so that's one thing that I'm absolutely watching. I think every investor of all stripes, regardless of what you're purchasing, is watching that story. More specifically in the ETF space, of course, has to be two things that I'm looking at. One is going to be cryptocurrency. Are we going to be seeing those Ethereum ETFs dropping in May? I've got a little bit of a bet going. I told Eric Balchunas that I'll take the bet that the SEC is going to approve the spot Ether ETF.
Oh, interesting.
In May.
Very interesting.
He was taking the bearish case, so I decided to take the bull case that they're going to do it. And obviously, what does that open up the door to, right? Beyond Bitcoin and Ether, you know, the OGs, but are we going to see Solana ETFs, for example? What other coins are we going to start to see really come to the market as we have this sort of broad adaptation of cryptocurrency in the investing space? And then continuing on from crypto, really what I'm looking at is kind of very forward looking. And I know you might think I'm going to say AI, but it's actually going to be the tokenization of investing, essentially. And the tokenization that I think is probably going to be coming when it comes to the ETF space, right? Will we be purchasing ETFs, or are we going to start purchasing digital assets? And how is that blockchain going to be used when it comes to investing? How is that going to change the entire market? I think that's something that a lot of folks are starting to have an eye on, and if they're not, they definitely should.
It is so funny how much you and I are on the same page today, because you mentioned the macro story with inflation and the Fed. I talked all about that in the first segment, just about this challenge around fixed income. You mentioned an ETF like TLT that we saw investors pile into last year. Mm-hmm. And you look this year, that thing's down 8%. And I think investors are really struggling with whether to take on duration risk right now, even whether to take on credit risk. You know, the economy looks really good, but you have very tight credit spreads right now. And I think some investors are concerned that maybe if we get an economic slowdown, that's not exactly where you want to be. So I agree. I think that's going to be really interesting to watch. And I think that we're also going to continue to see a lot of product launches on the fixed income ETF side, a lot of innovative products coming to market to try to help solve that challenge of fixed income. On the spot Ether ETFs, it's so funny. I think, you know, that's kind of a a pet topic of mine in general. I think I love you going out on the limb and saying that we'll get this May approval. I'm not quite as bullish on that just because we haven't seen the Fed really the SEC really engage with issuers. Now, it may be they're intentionally trying to keep everything quiet here and not have the clown show that we had around spot Bitcoin ETF.
Time.
Yeah. So I could 100% see that being the case. They're just trying to keep this really quiet, be much more professional, and then we will get approval because I believe these should exist. If you just take a step back, we have the CME traded Ether futures, traded Ether futures ETFs. We now have spot Bitcoin ETFs. We have the Grayscale lawsuit victory. You add all that up. And in my opinion, the logical conclusion is that spot Ether ETF should exist. So I think these should be approved. I'm still hesitant to make that call for May because we haven't seen that public engagement. But I'll say this, if these aren't approved in May, I actually have a bet with Eric Balchunas that I think we'll see a lawsuit pretty quickly from one of the issuers, probably Grayscale, but it could be somebody else because of everything that I just mentioned. So I agree. That's an interesting story. And then you mentioned the tokenization, I think, is a really interesting topic. I've covered that on the podcast quite a bit. My take on that is just very simply, I think it aligns with yours. I think we are going to end up with tokenized securities. That's just a matter of time. It's going to happen. It's just a matter of how long that takes.
Right.
And you look at the regulatory backdrop around crypto right now, we can't get any sort of basic framework around crypto in place right now. So the question is just how long does it take for that to happen? It's going to happen, but you know, is that a 5-year, 10 years, 20 years? Boy, that's a tough one to guess.
Oh, and I definitely don't have a crystal ball on that, but I definitely agree with you. I think it's a matter of when and not if, and just a matter for, as always is the case, and this is obviously a beat of mine, really sort of marrying what sort of happens on the Hill with what's happening in the world of finance. But as is what always happens is, can regulators kind of essentially catch up to the technology? And this happens all the time. We've seen it with cryptocurrency, but we've just seen it in so many other parts of the market. If regulators can sort of catch up to the tech, which always outpaces them, can they understand it? Can they figure out the use cases? Can they figure out how to regulate it? Those are going to all be those questions. And I think just because there has been so much confusion around digital assets, around cryptocurrency, I think you're right and probably saying it's going to be more of a 5 to 10 year type of timeline. This is not something that's going to be happening in 2025. But I mean, hey, the Fed is talking already about a digital dollar. And so I see that I don't see a world where in 10, 15 years that we're not going to be seeing a tokenization of securities. I just think it's a matter of time, really, before that happens. And as far as those, you know, Ether ETF, I mean, Nate, if you wanna have a bet, our own side bet, we can have something going between us as well, and we can figure out what it is that we'll have to pony up for the loser.
I love that. Let's definitely do a bet. So I'm going to see you here in person in just a couple of days. So let me think about what that should look like. But you're definitely on for a bet. And Kristen, we're going to have to leave it there. But I really enjoyed this. So much fun visiting with you. Again, this will be fun to see you in person. But thank you for joining me this week.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me. And can't wait to see you on Wednesday.
That was Kristen Myers, editor-in-chief at ETF.com. That'll do it for this week's ETF Prime. Next week, I'll be joined by Stratega's Chris Verone. So he's head of technical and macro research there. He's also the portfolio manager on the recently launched Stratega's Macro Momentum ETF, which we'll certainly get into that. But I'm looking forward to this conversation because we're going to talk much more broadly about the momentum factor itself. And also just discuss the macro environment overall. Should be insightful. Until then, have a great week, everyone.